This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. For now, the issue of taking action to combat climate change seems to belong to the left end of the political spectrum. As our guest, Rob Sisson, would point out, it hasn't always been that way, and he's working to change the dynamics again. The former mayor of Sturgis is executive director of Conserve America. Sisson's group, which describes itself as made up of Republicans, moderates, and independents, advocates for action that will lead to cleaner air and water, as well as other conservation issues. Rob Sisson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's note that we are speaking on Tuesday. You're due to speak at an event tonight in Kalamazoo, but we, of course, are right on the edge of Earth Day, which seems like a good time to talk a little bit about climate change issues of conservation. But let's back up and explain what your group does.
Actually, this year is the 20th anniversary of my organization. I joined it 9 years ago. We work with Republicans and conservatives on messaging and helping them find paths forward on environmental and conservation issues.
Has that become more difficult, say, in 2015 than it was in maybe 2005?
You know, it's ebbed and flowed. At certain points, it's easier, and other points, it's not. I would say that the hardest headwind we had was after the 2010 election and the rise of the Tea Party. And so one of the things our group has worked very hard on is educating those people that really are new to the party and are, frankly, very active in the party about the legacy of the GOP, its great conservation ethic, and the fact that there are conservative solutions and reasons to attack environmental problems.
Has there been something, though, of a hardening in the conservative movement against things like regulation and taxes, therefore government action, which would be perhaps part of the solution to doing something about climate change?
Yeah, that's definitely a part of the problem. And again, it's incumbent upon us to help share that message and logic on ways around that roadblock. We were talking before we went on air about Bob Inglis, who is a former Republican member of Congress, and he touts a carbon tax. That certainly is one actually conservative way to approach it. But when you discuss this with Republicans or conservatives, you need to talk in terms of tax restructuring, not a new tax. So there are different ways to talk about some of these solutions that frame them as conservative.
Well, give us some more examples. How would a tax restructuring work that would be a conservative solution and also get us to the point where it's addressing climate change?
Sure. And again, Bob is very well known for pointing out, don't we want to tax things we want less of, like pollution, and tax less of things we want more of, like income? And so one of the popular talking points or discussion points that we see in the climate action circles is a climate tax replacing payroll taxes or lowering business taxes to help spur the economy. So there are trade-offs like that, and there are as many ideas and suggestions as there are people at the table right now.
But again, there is a philosophical question there about what taxes are supposed to do. And part of what you're talking about there is using the tax code to try and nudge behavior in the direction we would want it. There is a conservative strain of thought that says the only thing we should be using taxation for is to get the revenue we need for the very basic essential services of government. Therefore, trying to do anything which changes climate factors and that sort of thing is really not the government's job.
Well, right. And probably the majority of members of Congress, particularly on the Republican side, have signed that Grover Norquist pledge that said, no new taxes. So even if it was a
revenue neutral
tax, that would still be argued that it was a new tax. So in my organization, we're not putting out a carbon tax or cap and trade or any particular solution. But we are identifying and talking with Republicans about marginal steps forward on lowering carbon emissions. And here in Michigan, Governor Snyder, I think, has done a phenomenal job. Over the next several years, we're going to see 7 to 9 coal plants retired. And most of that baseline electricity will be replaced by natural gas, which isn't perfect, but the emissions are far less than coal. And we have our own natural gas reserves here in Michigan. So it's kind of a win-win for our economy and for the environment at this point.
But in order to get to the point where we're debating carbon tax or cap and trade or any of those sort of things, do we need general acceptance of the premise that climate change is real, is happening right now, and is at least contributed to by humans?
That would be a big help. Yeah. One thing I know, because I've spoken to so many members of Congress and staff members, is that there is acceptance and acknowledgement of the science behind climate change. what some people say publicly and what they believe personally are often two different things in the world of politics, unfortunately. In fact, I met last week with someone who I think most people would consider one of the farthest right and even marginalized in the Congress to the right members, who told me that exact same thing, that I get it, I understand it, but I don't see a path forward politically for me to address it. So one thing we try to do is, you know, we do our own polling, we use other people's polling to try to build let these people know that people have their back if they want to move forward on this. And then we talk about solutions and ways to talk about it that won't alienate their constituencies.
Well, does it maybe require a step back from there, though, to educating the voters? You mentioned former Congressman Bob Inglis, who our listeners heard on our air a year and a half ago, maybe. He lost the Republican primary, and he said that he committed many heresies as far as Republican voters were concerned. But he said the one that he's pretty convinced, that he's convinced led to his defeat, was speaking out on climate change. If Republican voters who vote in primaries, at least, and vote in primaries consistently, are the ones you can count on getting to the polls, if they are rewarding people who dispel the idea of climate change, is it going to be tough for Republicans to speak openly and honestly, even if they agree with you on the issues?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. And one of my pet peeves, and I think if you were to speak to elected Republicans, either local, state, federal level, one of the great frustrations is the amount of money that's been spent preaching to the choir. The big, well-known environmental groups, Tom Steyer, the billionaire who's pouring billions now into climate change advocacy, most of that money is preaching to the choir, either voters who already agree with the science and what needs to be done, or politicians that already agree. And just if a fraction of that would be spent and dedicated to educating people on the right, voters on the right, we'd be miles ahead. In fact, my presentation tonight for Earth Day here in Kalamazoo will provide a little bit of that education and why conservation is conservative. Russell Kirk, who was a great writer, lived here in Michigan, is widely considered Ronald Reagan's conservative conscience. He said, there's nothing more conservative than conservation. And so many people who have become active in politics in the last 6 or 7 years aren't aware of that. They don't know that legacy. And then here I'm wearing a blue blazer in your studio, but when I go and speak to college Republican groups or young Republican groups, there's all these guys with khakis and blue blazers on that really are parodying what they're seeing in the national media, what they think a Republican is or a conservative has to stand for. And when I share the history and legacy of the party and the great things that the party accomplished and is responsible for, you can see the wheel spinning in their minds, and it's a different story going forward.
You mentioned the money, though, which is going into, as you say, preaching to the choir. There also is a lot of money going into politics, which is aimed at keeping environmental regulations where they are, or even perhaps dialing them back. Is that part of the problem, that there is a lot of money going in, which is maybe muddying the water on what is happening with climate change?
Absolutely. There are a lot of problems here that we have to deal with. I try to focus on ones I might be able to impact. I don't have the checkbook to do that, to make a difference in that. But yeah, when you look at some of the prominent people that are fomenting denial of science, either through the media or written mediums, they're the same people that were participating 20 years ago in denial of tobacco's ill health consequences. They're paid advisors, and their job is to sow confusion and mistrust on issues. And right, and, you know, they've done a very effective job the last 5 years on climate science.
So how do you ultimately get to a point where you get beyond having the big partisan divide on this issue, and therefore maybe just some basic agreement that, yes, there's a problem, and then you can have the partisan fights over how we deal with it?
Well, I think one of the secrets that I wish wasn't a secret is that there really isn't a partisan divide on climate, at least among voters. Our organization did polling in 7 or 8 states last year, ranging from New Hampshire down to Texas, Arizona, and California, Illinois, New Jersey, New York. And we asked high-efficacy Republican voters. These are people that vote in primaries and rarely miss an opportunity to vote. If your candidate supported action on climate change, even if it increased your utility rates or caused an increase in taxes, would that change your vote for that person? About 60% across the board said, no, wouldn't affect my vote. Now, the reason why I think that's very positive is we also asked a test question about Obamacare. If your candidate supported Obamacare, would you change your vote? 55% said, yeah, they'd change their vote. So that's evidence to me, with our own data, that voters across the spectrum and a good majority of Republican voters care about climate change and want action on it. And when you look at the broader electorate, it's even a higher percentage.
But of course, pollsters will also tell you that there is a difference depending on how important the issue is to that voter. And is it the case that for voters, this is still not number one on the list for most of them, that this falls somewhere after the economy, national security, and perhaps healthcare, or maybe other issues?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Pew comes out with a poll every year that is a snapshot of voter priorities. And for the last 15 years, the economy, my job, educating my kid, healthcare, all rank above the environment or climate change. And again, that becomes incumbent upon the people working in climate advocacy to message on this, that climate change is going to impact the economy, jobs, our health. If not already, it will begin to have serious implications in the near future. And the price tag of dealing with it just continues to skyrocket. So the sooner we get going, the better for all of us.
Do you believe it's also the case that if we continue to not address the problem, that the ultimate solution is going to involve more government? If it involves a bigger solution 5-10 years down the road?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting, here in Michigan, we have some factions of anti-Agenda 21 people throughout the state. In fact, there's a couple different county commissions have voted that their county government cannot use sustainability practices because that's part of the United Nations conspiracy to take over our government. In Florida right now, at high tide, there are neighborhoods that flood because of rising oceans. And so we're going to see more and more onerous zoning and building codes in coastal areas. You know, we may see energy codes that require us to use certain forms of energy that we don't really want to use or aren't efficient in our part of the world. There are all sorts of implications that, I mean, I can't anticipate right now. We could sit here for the next 2 hours and come up with different ways it's going to impact us.
Of course, the long-term effects of climate change are things that should concern us for our health, safety, et cetera. In the short term, can you convince Republicans that there is a political price to pay right now? I mean, because Republicans may look and say, hey, look, we control the House and the Senate. We didn't lose the presidential race in 2012 by very much. 2016, who knows? We control more state legislatures. We have more Republican governors. What's the evidence that climate change is hurting us politically?
That's a great point. And again, I go back to polling. There's a lot of discussion about demographics and how they're changing in the United States. One of the polls I will share tonight is Latino Decisions, about how Hispanic voters support action on climate change and are very concerned about it. And it's pushing 80%. Millennial voters, young voters, really care about this. This is a big issue for them. David Frum, who's a political commentator, wrote an article in Foreign Affairs magazine this week where he lays out the problem for the Republican Party. And basically, the party relies on elderly, around the average age of 70, 75-year-old voter who's white and who's scared. They're scared about the things we've mentioned about priorities, jobs, the economy, but they're also scared that they're going to lose what the government's giving them, Social Security, Medicare, and that's why there's this big pushback against so-called entitlements, is because there's a big faction of base support that are afraid they're going to lose what they think is rightfully theirs.
Looking ahead politically to 2016, do you see a candidate in there? And there's a lot of them that have said that they are at least interested in running for the Republican nomination for president. Are there any of them who have leapt off the page to you and said, you know, that's someone who looks like they could move the needle on climate change?
None of them have leapt off the page at this point. I have been in communication with a couple of them and with the staffs of a couple others, and we're going to be in a better place in 2016 than we were in 2012 with our candidate. I know that Jeb Bush, Rand Paul, Carly Fiorina, John Kasich, Rick Snyder, if he jumps in, all are in a good place on climate change, particularly the science. I think they've all discussed The big question is, what do we do that doesn't tank our economy? I look at a couple of those. Rand Paul excites a certain demographic group. And if that's what it takes to move the needle forward, I'm fine with that. Jeb Bush, when he was governor of Florida, I think did an outstanding job managing state government. He took on the massive effort of restoration of the Everglades, which was just an enormous effort, and moved that light years ahead of where it had been. Carly Fiorina is a business person. She understands the risk and reward of not tackling climate. So I know that the two candidates with whom I spoke said they expect climate change to be front and center in the debates, both in the primary season and in the general election season. So I know that these candidates are preparing and are being thoughtful about the topic. So I'm encouraged that 2016 will be far different than 2012.
As we noted, you are in Kalamazoo to speak tonight, which we're speaking on Tuesday. So it's the day before Earth Day. We've been told that this event is called the Climate of Hope, or that's the name of your address, I guess. Can you tell us what does give reason for hope right now on the issue of climate change?
Sure. I think we're much closer to a tipping point on climate action in Washington than most people think or give credit to Congress on. Part of that is based on discussions that I have had, or our organization has had, with different people, or some of the peer groups we work with have had other conversations. There's a lot of comparing notes behind the scenes. The demographics, I think, we've discussed, are very strong in favor of action on climate change. The event tonight at the church is really a faith-based community of people, and I think therein is one of the secrets. There is a vast effort among faith organizations to make this happen. And with the Pope's encyclical coming out in June or July, which we fully expect will call for action on climate change, that will have a huge impact. About 30% of Congress are Republicans. We've already seen a number of leaders of other mainline denominations in the United States take stands on climate change in anticipation of the Pope's encyclical. Indeed, every major denomination has a statement on climate change and creation care. And the Pope's only going to raise that up in visibility and get it into the pews. And it becomes very difficult for a politician to argue against the moral foundation of their constituents asking for this policy.
Rob Sisson, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Rob Sisson is Executive Director of Conserve America. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.